Welcome along to the Wise Men's here, where we're about to discuss why winning football matches is overrated anyway. We're in association with Love Supreme, of course. You're listening to Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker, and we're joined by a couple of guests, as we are most weeks, to analyse the weekend's game. That's how you're getting introduced from now on, Gareth. Are you happy with that? I've stumbled across something that works, I think, after about a year and a half. I'm just going to introduce you, and
I'm just indifferent, naturally indifferent.
People should know you well enough now anyway. We don't need a small talk.
It's a shame for them, isn't it?
It certainly is. James Hunter, Sunderland reporter for The Chronicle, is here. Always a pleasure, James.
Yeah, always a pleasure to
How
be here.
How's the Sunderland reporting going this season?
Sunderland reporting.
Well, he's a Sunderland reporter, so I'm asking how his Sunderland reporting is going.
What an open question that
is. Yeah, well.
It's low-key, shall we say.
No wins, but it's not often we witness... You know, no wins in this sort of manner, is it? It's normally a bit different when we find ourselves not winning.
Pretty much the same last season. Well, more points on the board this time, which is the important thing, isn't it? I mean, I think when you look at the two starts, they're both winless at this stage, but chalk and cheese, really, in terms of the way that the teams play and the vibe around the place and the points on the board.
Okay, Luke Bowley is here as well from Roker Report. How are you finding living back in Sunderland, Luke?
That's quite a question as well, isn't it?
So you hadn't been here for a while, and you commented the fact that it looked like a bomb site the other day because of all the developments.
No, I never said bomb site. I said building site. And
I thought it was bomb site, Gareth. Did you mind?
I didn't see it
because it's like one big hole, isn't it?
Staying out. It's like one big hole.
Is it time to?
That's actually they're going to run with that at the
welcome
the
to
promotional
Sunderland
campaign.
Yeah. Welcome to Sunderland. It's just one big hole.
It's just one big hole.
Yeah. Well, it's a you
insert
know, it's
your
a
words into that sentence.
Yeah.
Well, it's a hole I call home, so you know I'm happy to be back, and happy to be able. I finally went to my first two matches of the season this week,
and they are allegedly building things. It's not always going to be like that. Not the word allegedly there.
Luke was leading you a nice eat some football
chat
there.
I was providing you with a finest link.
You're supposed to just
have.
Provide jokes. I keep saying every time you come on.
Yeah.
You're not really on for your football knowledge.
Still win.
Right. All right, let's talk about the football. Surprised at the negativity, Gareth, surrounding this result personally and the performance. Considering people were pessimistic before the game, they now seemed aggrieved at the end of it.
Weird,
isn't it?
Odd,
isn't it?
Strange. It was just strange because I thought we played quite well. I enjoyed the game as well. People were sort of saying it was a dour game and stuff like that. I thought, well, I didn't think it was dour. They did everything but score in the game. Did everything that people want. Some people want anyway. Apparently, retaining possession is a booable offence now at the stadium, which is absolutely pathetic. But yeah, I noticed some of that going on.
But towards the end, when people
just generally, it's like stupid. Like why go at the game and because one when we knocked it forward.
I didn't know where I was, mind. I'll be honest. I could see people were sort of urging them to go forward a little bit more.
There was
just because there was sort of you know they could sense time was running out and we weren't going to score.
There was
the goal,
definitely people booing because they were passing the ball.
All right.
Basically.
Okay. I didn't see it. Well,
so if you're
going to
do that, don't bother coming back. That would be my advice.
All right. Well, we'll hear from Gus now. Hear what he thought about the game.
I think from all the games, this is the one that we really deserve to win. Even 11-11. You know, the best chances, the most approaches, the most ball in the box. You know, you can analyze this game anyway. You know, by possession. Or by position of the ball, you know, people like how many crosses and how many free kicks and how many shots and how many headers. And I'm sure we were better in everything, apart from putting the ball in the net, which, it's difficult to take. But I'm pleased, you know. I'm a person who likes to see the team playing a certain way. And that's the way we play and the way we try. And even when the fans that were trying to make us kick the ball forward, we keep passing and looking for the ball to the right area to cross. And that's how we created the chance.
Well, that's Gus talking about what you said there.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I don't know. Did you hear that, Luke? Where are you sitting?
I heard quite a few, not so much boos, but a lot of frustration every time the ball went back to the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the sort of early stages of the game, in sort of periods during the first half, people seemed to be getting frustrated, which surprised me a little bit, because surely by now we know that this is how we play.
I'll be honest, I think the Sunderland fans have taken this style more than people thought they would. I think they'll get a little bit agitated because
James was sitting near where I was sitting, I guess. So I guess he might be able to shed some light on whether he thought there were some boos.
There were definitely some boos, you know, without question.
I'm not saying it was everyone, by the way.
No, of course not. But there was a feeling of frustration, and that's easy to understand. You're in the final 10 minutes of the game. Swansea are down to 10 men, and you want to go on and win. But, you know, there's a fine dividing line between, you know, having a bit of urgency and trying to go on and win the game from there, and lumping the ball aimlessly into the box. Sunderland have done that many a time for over many years, and it hasn't worked. So I think possibly it's a case of getting used to a different, seeing a different approach. Mm. I think it's the right way to go for Sunderland, to hold on to possession and push forward. But I can understand why people wanted a bit more urgency, of course.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that the negativity surprising the result, surrounding the result was surprising, sorry. Because before, people seemed a little bit pessimistic. Now, I was slightly concerned about the trio in the middle of Swansea's Park. Key, Jonjo Shelvey, the sort of anchor Sigurdsson, don't they? And, you know, as far as, if you're thinking about a team outside the top seven or eight, that's as good as you're going to get, isn't it? In the midfield, James?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, Swansea have got a reputation as probably the best footballing side outside the elite in the Premier League. So from my point of view, it was very encouraging to see Sunderland outplay that team, because let's make no mistake about it, they did outplay Swansea at the weekend, and as Gareth said earlier, they did everything but score and get the points. Now, of course, we know that winning games and picking up 3 points is the most important thing, but it's a process, and Sunderland are improving. If you look at the two goalless draws against Swansea this weekend and Burnley the weekend previous, you know, they were completely different, completely different games, completely different styles of play, completely different completely different atmosphere surrounding them. The only thing that was the same was the result.
Yeah, talk about two 0-0 games being totally different to each other. Yeah. But Gareth, what I was impressed that not only did we stop Swansea playing, which we did, and I think you have to do against sides like Swansea, but we also managed to get on the front foot ourselves besides that.
Yeah, well, they were completely dominant. I thought Swansea barely had an opportunity in the game. Sunderland were form advanced in what they were trying to do, in terms of possession, so, you know, they weren't keeping it. It wasn't like they were keeping it right on the edge of their own box. They were keeping it sort of nearer the sort of D, the halfway line, and then, you know, the extra pace that they added in certain areas certainly helped with people like Buckley. I think he made a difference. It was a lot more positive. They looked a lot more likely to create chances. But it's just that final, not even the final ball, I'd argue in this case, because there was three good balls.
Getting in behind the second half, especially.
Yeah, there was three good deliveries into the box that could have resulted in goals had the chances been taken.
Yeah, Luke Lee Catamol plays a big part in both scenarios.
And our lives.
Yeah, certainly does. But in you know, in both examples there, stopping Swansea from playing, you know, pressing down quickly, but also pushing the team on, driving the team forward.
Yeah, he's just, I went to the Stoke game where obviously he didn't play, and he was just, you could feel he was a huge miss. When, you know, we'd win the ball in the middle of the field and there was no one to really drive us forward and push us on, and that was definitely there against Swansea. I mean, I adore Lee Cathamall. I've said this many times.
We all do. Luke,
he's my favourite footballer probably of all time.
But wow, that's a statement.
I'm just putting it out there because it's sort of like it's just someone who I love no matter what he does. I feel like eventually he's going to get...
Is this more than a football thing, Luke?
Well, kind of. But because I know eventually he's going to get two yellow cards in quick succession and get sent off. And I get the feeling I'm still going to love him more. But no, he was outstanding against Swansea. He was probably our best player on the pitch. And he just pressed them so well and stopped them from playing. And like you said, he just has these leadership qualities in the middle where he'll just drive the team forward... and push him on. It's no surprise that we just looked a lot better with him at his best, really.
Well, unconditional love is the best kind of love. Sticking with our midfielders and love, because Gareth loves Seb Larsson and all that. I don't need to ask his opinion on
it. Not so much. I wouldn't say to love him.
Well, you're very fond of him then. He sort of polarises opinion, James. Seb, what did you think about his performance the weekend?
I really like Seb Larsson. I think in many ways he reminds me of a Jack Colback type character, insofar as fans and other people look at the games and say, what does he do? He doesn't score goals, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. But he's the kind of player that managers love, which is why he's been a regular in that central midfield under Gus Poyet. He's not there for no reason. You know, Gus has got options. You know, Gus has got Jordi Gomez in there who he would love to involve. But Seb Larsson gets the nod over him every time. And that's got to be for a good reason. And Seb's such a hard worker and industrious player. Again, similar parallel to Jack Colback. And I think he plays a vital role. I really do.
I thought, I mean, you know, I've heard all sorts of opinions on it. And a lot of some people are saying he was man of the match. Some people are saying he was rubbish. And I'm kind of in the middle. I thought the first half he was, Fowler, you know, he's certainly not for the one, lack of trying, but I thought he was slightly a yard off the pace. Second half, I thought he was brilliant. So yeah, I think credit where it's due. Luke, that a player can turn their performance round like that as well, especially someone like Larsson, who sort of has his reputation for going missing in games as well.
Mm. And he did create our best chance of the game with that ball from the into Wickham. I really like Seb Larsson. I think it's clear that he does a job there. Even when he's not doing that great on the ball, he'll give you a lot off it in sort of closing down and sort of a lot of energy. So I'm a big fan of his, and I thought, yeah, he did very well in the second half. I thought it was more like the performance we saw towards the end of last season, where he suddenly became this sort of a lot more creative, and he started to see those passes. Mm-hmm. And he's along with Cattermole, he's the two you'd definitely have in that midfield. Oh. When a lot of people say he's the one you'd take out,
my opinion changes every week. I think I don't think Gomez does enough when he comes on. He played well again the weekend, but then he has a game where he doesn't do much. I thought. What I will say about Larsson, Gareth, I thought, you know, when it comes to turning over possession, he was key, second half especially.
No, he's great. He just does, does, you know, simple things well, I think, and like you say, it's just keeping the ball, and, you know, he does give you something, like he created the chance for Wickham. He put it on the plate for him, really. Couldn't do any more than that. You know, I think sometimes people get bogged down with things like, you know, in a football match, it's you know, it's not like a game of three and in or whatever, where you just line up and have pot shots at the goalkeeper. There's, you know, a process to get into that area, and you need an amount of players in your team who are going to do the donkey work to create those opportunities. And I just think, you know, it's not as simple as just, you know, loading up your team with, you know, attackers or whatever and being able to score lots of goals. You need players in the team who are going to do what people like Seb Larsson do. And I think when people say that he was dreadful or didn't offer anything, it's like, well, what do you expect from him? What's your expectation level of that player? And he's not gonna do what you want him to do, but that doesn't mean that he's a bad player because he's not scoring 7-8 goals a season and having hatfuls of assists, you know?
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I think, you know, again, I'm sort of down the middle with him, so that leaves Jack Rodwell out of those three. James, how long do we need to be patient for? I've been coming every week and saying, you know, it's important that fans are patient. He hasn't played a lot of football, and, you know, we can't expect too much of him. We've played 6 games now.
Yeah, well, what
sort of figure would you put on it?
You make a fair point. I think, you know, I would definitely say that that he's underperformed so far. He's not delivered what I would have expected from him so far. I think that, like you say, he's 6 games into the season. He's only played one full 90 minutes though at Burnley, and he probably wouldn't have played that had it not been for injuries. So I think given time, he will come good. But I think Gus Poyet made a very good point in the build up to the game last week, and he was saying it's very different when you're playing at Manchester City and you're enjoying 60-65% possession in every game and you've got the ball. That's one thing. When you come to Sunderland, and more often than not in games, it's either even or you've actually got less of the ball and you're spending your time chasing it, that can take some getting used to for a player, and I think maybe Jack's making that transition.
I mean, I'm not trying to sound too harsh. I think he will come good. I'm just sort of raising a point here, Gareth, because there is some people who would, you know, correctly point out that we spent a lot of money on him, like practically all of our transfer budget. So when you know, if you put it in context, a player like that needs to deliver for a side like us.
I think context is the key word again, though. You know, people get annoyed about the fact that we lose players who we get on short-term deals and don't retain them the following year, and then we sign a player for 5 years And because he hasn't done it in six games, it's a problem. You know, everyone knows the situation with Jack Rodwell. Everyone knows how good he was before he went to Manchester City. Everyone knew that he actually did quite well at Manchester City when he got given his limited opportunities, and he's had problems. He's played, like James says, one or two full games for Sunderland, six games. You know, it's a new club. It's a totally different prospect, because Everton and Manchester City are both more successful clubs in Sunderland in recent times, and he'll have been playing with better players. So I'm not even overanalyzing Rodwell at the moment. I think you've got to keep playing him until he comes good, because, like you say, you've invested that money in him, and everyone should be understanding of the situation. I understand results are important short term, but we're not losing games every week. I know we're not winning, but we're not getting tanked.
So would you suggest then perhaps the next game, considering the opponents, would be a game where you start to look and say, okay, if this doesn't work again, then there might have to be something changes there?
No. Like, keep him in. Keep playing him. He's only going to get better by playing. So if you drop him, you're only going to get what you expect if you let him settle in and let him get better. And he will get better, because he's a proven quality player. He's not going to just be rubbish for Sunderland. He's going to be a good player for Sunderland. You know, you look at him and you know he's going to be. He's got a great pedigree.
No, I agree with you.
I just think you've got to play him, because it's too much short-termism in football, in my opinion, especially for a club like Sunderland, because we're not competing at the top of the league. There's no immediacy for success. The likelihood is the season will peter out in the mid-table anyway. So we're not under pressure for him to deliver something special for us. You know, in the long term he might, but in the immediate future, there's no. I just don't think there's a necessity to put that pressure on that player to deliver something that ultimately is irrelevant.
I think there's a lot of it come down to the fact, James, that because of the way we played Saturday, you feel that, you know, the performances Catamall and Larson put in, had the third midfielder then sort of really grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck, then it was certainly there for the taking, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of that, isn't there? I think more of a concern to me was less so on Saturday. It was more the fact that Jack Rodwell didn't impose himself at Burnley was more of a concern in my eyes, because that's the sort of game where you would expect him to grab it by the scruff of the neck. You know, against Swansea, when you're playing against a midfield that contains Shelvey and Key and Sigurdsson, you know, these are very good, high quality, established Premier League players. So that's going to be a lot more of an even contest in midfield there. I think, like I say, I think it's still early days for Jack Rodwell, and it's not like he's had a disastrous time up to now. He's been steady away, and you know, given time, I think he will start to become a bigger influence in the team.
Yeah. Has he been recovering from this cold? Has he been so much better or so much worse than someone like Gomez, who a lot of people are clamouring to get into the team?
No, but I think, I think the price tag thing, isn't it?
I know, but it's ridiculous. It's like people take these factors, like these irrelevant factors, and like sort of pile them in.
I think there's some relevance in these price tags.
I don't think there is, because that's just how much it costs for one of those players. It's just the way it is. Like the Craig Gordon effect thing, like we saw.
I like Craig Gordon.
I know, but loads of people. Every time with Craig Gordon, it was the first thing that people brought up was how much he cost. Well, he didn't pay it.
No, I get
and
that.
And he didn't sell
that.
It. So
don't mistake me. No, I'm not.
Right. I just think it's too early to start, you know, being really harshly critical. Because I've seen people being harshly critical. I know nobody in here is being that way, but I just feel, you know, maybe that point about him being on the ball more, if you played him deeper, he'd be on it more, and then he'd get more comfortable on it. I've said before, at the moment, when he's playing in that more advanced area, because he hasn't got the ball a lot of the time, he looks a little bit like he's playing piggy in the middle, because players are passing around him. Because, you know, that's tough.
It's almost like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, isn't it? Because you think, well, if that's a position he's been bought to play in, and you want him to develop every game, every week, you're going to have to play him there, aren't you?
Look at Key last season, who started as a defensive midfielder, and then gradually he was moved further forward. So
I think that was probably just because he didn't see that
player
and cut him all low,
wasn't
it?
It was, but it, you know, a player can play one place and do something and then play further forward. If he was playing deeper, he'd be on the ball more.
Okay, leave Jack Rodwell alone, Luke. Right, we can't praise the space.
I was thinking some terrible things about Jack Rodwell for all of that.
I just took your silence as being one of the aggressors. We can't praise the space created without mentioning Connor Wickham. Now, he's another one of my polarised opinion on how he performed, Luke. Where are we with it?
I thought overall his contribution was positive, and you know, he won a lot of free kicks in the middle. He caused he was the centre half that was on him. It was actually Williams. He caused him a bit of a nightmare because he was just winning those fouls on the halfway line and getting free kicks where we could create chances. And also his hold up play is terrific. But again, that's where ultimately the problem in this team lies up front. And he had his one chance, which was, if we're being honest, on a plate for him, and he missed it. And you have to take your chances in these sort of situations. When you're on top in a game like we were against Swansea, and you have that chance, he has to take it. And unfortunately, he didn't. I'd still argue he's probably the best striker we've got at the moment. There's only really one challenger to that.
He's got to sort of mix him and Fletcher and mould him into one player. Yeah. Fletcher's finishing and Wickham's hold-up player. Because his touch is getting better, James, every week, isn't it? His hold-up player.
It is
getting better, but does he need an end product to his game?
Without a doubt.
If he's the guy seemingly holding all the cards in this contract negotiation as well.
Yeah. I mean,
you want him to be saying, come on, I'm putting these chances away.
Without a doubt. I mean, strikers are always going to be judged on the goals that they score, aren't they? I mean, it's no good you know, having all the other technical aspects of your game, if you don't put the ball in the net, then your side's going to struggle. Connor's not managed to do that in the league this season, which is obviously been one of the major factors that's prevented Sunderland from winning so far. I mean, that was a great chance that he had against Swansea, as Luke said, it was put on a plate for him by Seb Larson. And you have to think, had Stephen Fletcher been on the pitch at that stage, would he have scored that? Also, you have to think to yourself, had Stephen Fletcher started, might Stephen Fletcher have scored the chance that he did have, you know, rather than it coming to him after just 5 minutes? It's very hard.
Would Danny Graham have scored that header?
Josie Altidore, only striker to have scored this season, put that away.
No, Wigan scored.
Your serious question, would Danny Graham have scored? Had he come off the bench and been playing, possibly not. Had he had half a season at Middlesbrough, like he did at the end of last season, then maybe. It's very difficult to come in when you're cold and be immediately up to speed when you get a chance within a couple of minutes of coming on. Not easy. I think Gus Poyet's right to persevere with Connor Wickham. I think again, as Luke said, he's arguably Sunderland's best attacking option. It's quite close between him and Stephen Fletcher, but I think he probably is the best attacking option, and you got to stick with him. I think to do anything else would send out you know, the wrong signal. Would sense that you've lost confidence in him. And when you look at Sunderland's attacking options, as we were just discussing, you can't afford to have anybody you know, feeling miffed or having their nose put out of joint, can you? Because you can't really do anything until January now.
Yeah, no, I'll go along with that too. Just quickly before we move on.
I thought Fletcher was a bit unlucky with his header, because I thought he pretty much did everything right. He was coming onto it, and
that's what I mean. It's just a fine margin, and you think had he not been on just on the pitch for 5 minutes, had he been on for 75 minutes, he would probably have put that away.
Wickham was more like sort of Niall Quinn when he was getting the ball down, and then Brett Angel when he had the ball at his feet at the weekend. That's how I sort of compare him.
Can I just say about Wickham, the thing that he gets criticised most for is his decision making, and it is worth remembering that he is still only like 22 years old, and that decision making is something that does come with age.
Yeah, like, and you earlier, I mean, you were saying you went out too early for the Metro, Luke.
Yeah, I know, I was an hour early for this podcast.
So in 2 years' time, that wouldn't have happened.
No, that's what I'm saying. In 2 years, I'm the same age as Connor Wickham, which is weird to think about. But in a couple of years, I will be arriving at a podcast on time, and Connor Wickham will be a 20-goal-a-season player.
Play for somebody better than us.
You saw that with Connor in the early minutes, didn't you, against Swansea, when he should have played the ball out wide to Adam Johnson, and he took the pot shot himself, and somebody caught it in row Z, didn't they?
Mm. All right, quickly, before we move on, because we're going to want to talk about defenders and other stuff, Ricky Alvarez, nice little cameo, everybody happy with that?
That was fun, wasn't it? Enjoyable. That's why I don't want to overanalyze the whole thing so much, but it was just nice to see somebody like that come on and do that for Sunderland. Like, I know we didn't win as a result of his work or anything, but from a purely entertainment perspective, it was quite nice to.
And him and Buckley on the pitch at the same time, James, getting fans off the backsides.
Yeah, well, they were both very exciting, weren't they, at the weekend? I mean, Will Buckley, I thought, was excellent throughout. I've got to keep reminding myself not to call him Alan Buckley, which is a sign of my age. But Will Buckley, really impressed, and I think he'll be a tremendous asset to Sunderland in the games that he's started against Manchester United and against Swansea. He's been absolutely fantastic. As for Alvarez, his little cameo was fantastic. He showed a bit of skill, a bit of trickery, the sort of thing that, like you say, people love to watch. And there was end product at the end of it where he was the player that put in the cross for Fletcher, and if that's a sign of what he can do when he's on the pitch for just a few minutes, then it augurs well for the future.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's all right doing all the step overs and whatever and looking good, but you've got to produce, and that's what he did. Like you say, James, he used his skill to get past people, to put crosses in, to cause problems.
Yeah, played with his head up.
He was nonchalant, that's what I would say. He was just so relaxed in the situation.
Or nonch, as Niall Quinn would put it.
Yeah.
Well, he looked like an Argentina international, didn't he? Which is, no bad thing. Him and Vergini, for that matter.
Yeah. Okay, we'll come on to Vergini and the defence. That's a great little segue. Thanks for that. But first, we're going to head back to that flat on Newcastle Quayside to see how Steve Bruce and Alan Pardew are getting along in their quest to find a suitable flatmate.
Last week on The Flat, Steve Bruce blew the rent on yet another average striker after taking exception to Alan Pardew's disregard for his 10th place certificate of achievement. Now Steve and Alan must acquire another flatmate to help them cover costs. Otherwise, the Geordie dream could be over before it even begins.
Well, Alan, it's time we had a good sit down and a chat about who to bring in, you know. Now, there's a few obvious options, if you ask me. Firstly, the boy Alex. He's always reliable, does a job.
No, Steve.
What do you mean? He's great at sweeping up.
No, Steve.
Well, okay. Second on my list is the lad Elmo, you know. I'd take him anywhere. He's a nailed-on candidate for the role, if you ask me. That's for sure.
I don't think so.
Well, the boy Myler.
No. After hours of talks, Alan finally comes up with a solution that they can both agree on. Well, he's a perfect candidate. He knows what it's like to live amongst the Geordie nation. He knows what it's like to be struggling with the press. He knows what it's like to be tired from the pressures of being manager of a club like Newcastle United. He knows what it's like to be abused by 52 fairs and screaming Geordies.
Absolutely, Alan. It can only be Big Sam. No doubt about it. That's for sure.
Alan and Steve propose the idea to Allardyce, who accepts a one-week trial stay at the flat. Sam knows he might be in the frame for the Sunderland job in a swap deal with the current incumbent, Gus Poyet.
This is a great opportunity for me to reacquaint myself with North East. I know how rough it can be at Newcastle, so I can empathise with Alan. At the same time, I can have a good chinwag over a couple of pints of gravy with Steve about Sunderland. It's an ideal situation for me.
Sam moves into the flat the very next day. However, it doesn't take long before Steve Bruce's striker fetish starts to grate on the meat-heavy Lancastrian.
How many times, Steve? No, I will not sell Andy to you. Come on, Sam, stop playing hard to get. I know you'll have a good transfer, just like the rest of us. You can have the boy Sagbo. He's a top lad. Never let you down. Sagbo? You must be kidding. How's he going to link up with big Kevin Nolan? No. Just wait for that offer to come in from Sunderland and I'll be taking the pair of them with me. I can always rely on Kev. But Sam, They'd hound any out for sure. Just look at me, 10th place, and I still didn't get the time. Andy wouldn't go there anyway, proud Geordie that he is.
He's right, Sam, Andy's places. Up there with the 64,000 screaming Geordies, roaring us on to another mid-table finish.
Soft, they're periers. Andy and Kev will do as I say. Trustworthy lads, real men. Just how it should be. It's all gravy when it comes to me and my signings. Just you wait and see.
Well, as soon as you lose a derby up here, you'll be struggling. We was struggling. Pappis, Tiles, Carlo, Maps, the other Tiles, Yoen, Debouche. The list is endless, Sam. They was struggling. They're unforgiving up here. You should know that.
He's right, Sam. Look at me. 10th place. You don't get a certificate like that for nothing. That's for sure. Ask anyone outside of Sunderland, and they respect the achievement, but not on Wearside, Sam. No, it's all 5-1 there. The bitterness, the hatred. It just doesn't go away. They hound you out. Lose a derby? You two lads really need a man up. I win them. 3-0 at the Lane, 3 on the trot. West Ham way, they know where they can stick that. They can boo all they want. It's like a barrow full of gravy to me. I'll lap it up.
No free news, Sam. Don't even mention the words round these parts, or season cards will be thrown at me, horses will be punched, Willowell still has to kip over mine at times, he has the nightmares about Josie.
Josie, you see, Alan? Now there's a striker you can rely on. Sam, how much do you want for him? Surely you'll sell him. You're only as good as your strikers.
Stop talking about strikers. It's all right for some. I haven't got any. Pappis has got a calf problem. Shola's moving on. Lowick's abandoned us.
Bloody hell, lads. I'm not Harry Redknapp. Leave me to me gravy, will yous? All it is here is strikers and self-pity. A man like me, Sam Allardyce, can do without losers like you two. It's unedifying. I could have been Real Madrid manager and won the lot if me name was Aladici. And here I am listening to you two meekly bemoaning your strikers and griefing your supporters. I mean, supporters. What kind of man with any self-respect listens to that lot? Stupidest thing Mike did was listen to them and sack me. Now he's lumbered with you.
You see a man struggling. A man whose position you've been in. And this is what you do. I want you out. I haven't got the power to get rid of you. But if I ask Mike nicely enough, he might get Graham to arrange a deal for me.
Aye, you're not the man for us, Sam, that's for sure. You have to admire my 10th place achievement, not belittle it. I once had no strikers too, you know. Little Cess had to go up front. I still got 10th.
10th bloody place, man. Embarrassing. I'm off, lads, and I'm taking me bestow with me.
And as Sam leaves, with more suitcases than he came in with, all full of quality gravy granules, Steve and Alan are left without a flatmate. And most importantly to Steve, gravyless. The search continues, but who is next in line? Find out next week on The Flat.
On to analysing the defence now. Okay, now I feel like we should almost have a round of applause, Gareth, when mentioning Billy Jones. He was everything I hoped he would be, really. He gave us that extra dimension going forward, one that matches Paddy Van Arnold over on the other side. It creates space for others to operate in, and you know, I just couldn't have went better, really.
No, he was good. It's nice to see, because you know he's been played at left back when he has played.
I looked very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and he got his chance in his favourite position and took it against Stoke, and then he carried it on. So that was nice.
It's good to have the balance, as I've just mentioned, James, isn't it? Because Van Arnold, I think, improves every game. I said on this show last week, I thought he was going to be one of our finds of the season, and I've seen nothing that changed my mind on that, but it's great having two of them do it.
It's just nice to see round pegs in round holes. I mean, don't know whether it'll ever catch on, but playing a right back at right back, a left back at left back, and two centre backs in central defence. You know, it doesn't seem rocket science, but Sunderland's defence, you know, looked much more solid as a result, I felt, against Swansea. Billy Jones made a real difference on the right. Not that Santiago Virginie hasn't done well in that position, filling in, but I think Jones certainly got forward and looked like what he is. He looked like a natural right back, and Sunderland looked all the better for that, both defensively and going forward.
Okay, we're going to hear a little bit more from Gus now. Gareth caught up with him after the game, and first just continuing on sort of what he thinks about the performance more or less, but then he does get on to a particular defender.
I'm calm, I promise you. And you know me last year how, you know, up and down we were because of the season, but right now I come out of the game and I'm able to stay there and talk to the opposite players because I think we've done everything possible to win. If we are awful, if we don't deserve nothing from the game, you won't see me staying outside and waiting for Key or anyone because that's the way I am. So keep going. I'm really looking forward to training this week and set up something special for the game that we go next week.
The pace of the game today as well, it's definitely something that sort of last season, back in the last season, Sunderland were a lot quicker. And today you saw that, what we saw about in the last season in the game today, and engaging sort of the forward players further up the pitch rather than them sort of picking the ball up in their own half and trying to dictate.
To be honest, it's because of the personnel as well. That gives you the chance. You know, in certain moments we were too deep last year and it was difficult to create that pace on the game. We didn't have a player like Boca. That gives you some electricity there, no? He gets the ball and they take you all the way. And I think there are players that they will excite the fans. I know they want to win. Don't worry, I'm the first one. I'm desperate to win a football game. But I think we're getting there close to what we want, a mix of keeping the ball and being good on the ball, but at the same time to keep the pace that the fans demand here in the Northeast.
And Virginia as well, I think, slotted in really well. And he's actually in a bit of an attacking threat, isn't he, with some of those balls inside the fullback that he plays.
He's a good player. He had an unlucky game last year at Arsenal. Everything was marked for one pass and one missed kick. And you know how he is the first impression with people, you know? They look at you the first day, and if you score two or three goals as a striker, you're a hero. It doesn't matter what you do in the next 50 games. Something similar happened to Sandy. Until he plays as a right back, and it was outstanding and convincing everyone. This year we saw him right back, centre half. He can cover any play, so he's a good plus for us.
Okay, before we mention Virginie specifically there, James, I thought just something to take from that when he said he was excited about the training. That seems to imply he thinks he stumbled upon a formula that works now, because he was also mentioned earlier on that he was trying to find one that didn't include Fabio Barini. Couldn't get through a show without mentioning him.
Every week it's just impossible.
But you know, again, before we move on to the Virginia thing, I think that's significant, isn't it? Because Gus struggles to hide his emotions, and if he was coming out now, you know, in a sort of depressed manner, then we'd be a little bit more worried. But the fact he's calm and he thinks it's around the corner, should we take heart in that?
I think so, yeah. I think Gus seemed very upbeat after the Swansea game. I think, as we've said here, he'd seen his team largely get it right. The only thing they lacked was the goal, as we said earlier, and I think he was tremendously encouraged by the performance and by the way that the team played. He has a big thing about, this is my team and this is how my team plays. Win, lose or draw, this is how I want my team to play. And I think he saw that against Swansea.
Yeah, okay, on to Virginie then. Billy Jones, obviously, we just mentioned that, allowed him to come in the middle and play in the middle of Virginie, Gareth. And this is a development I think we all had our eye on, because he played there briefly, as Gus just mentioned, when he first came, and he did look too lightweight, he looked positionally clueless at times, yet this was sort of the exact opposite of that. I thought he read the game very well, and you know, he seemed to know which runs to track, which passes to come out and intercept.
Yeah,
he didn't put himself in a position where he had to make recovery tackles, which is important.
He's got a touch of class about him, hasn't he, when he plays? I think that's notable. I mean, he's probably still got a lot to do to you know, make it in England as a centre-back, but he seems to have the equipment to do it. It was nice to see him and play as well as he did against Stoke when he played there. And say against Stoke, he's positive on the ball as well. He doesn't play like raking long passes and stuff like that. He keeps it on the deck and sort of tries to get people in when the spaces open up. And that's what they're trying to do when they work the ball across the back. It's not keeping the ball for the sake of it. They're trying to create opportunities to play people in. And he's an asset in that respect.
Do Quatez and Brown have a problem now, Luke?
I would say they might do, actually, because Virginie just fits that system a lot better. He'll start attacks, and which O'Shea and Brown, you do have issues maybe with their distribution. Virginie, he'll even look to get forward at times, which is always incredibly entertaining to watch. I'm always a fan of centre half sort of. Players like centre-halves bursting forward. and then potentially getting caught out of position. But you know, it's part of the joy, I think.
The same as Lee Cannonball's two yellow cards, you like. You're quite
sophisticated.
Yeah,
I think what I like is players feeling miserably, maybe. So yeah, I don't know.
You pick the right team support.
I like flaws, I think. Maybe that's what it is.
Do you remember that in every game, there was always one occasion when Nyrin Nosworthy would come striding out like a colossus and get over the halfway line? Just for that one moment, he looked like some kind of Brazilian superstar.
Yeah.
Before he'd revert to type and put out for throwing or something.
Although Virginie is, of course, a South American superstar now. He's a
superstar.
He's Argentinian.
He's in the squad, isn't he?
Yeah, that's something we didn't really sort of talk about, did we? The fact that he got in the Argentina squad, because that's a pretty good achievement, considering, and in the last 6 months.
Swansea had Federico Fernandez, who was also in the squad. So, you know, you had two Argentina centre-backs facing each other on Saturday, and I think there was no doubt which one looked the most impressive to me.
He was lucky to stay on the pitch, not Fernandez.
Does it seem like Brown would be the one who was worried, or is there a case for O'Shea?
I think with O'Shea being the captain, he's sort of got
just
that nailed
for that
down,
reason.
He?
I like O'Shea. O'Shea comes in for pelters a lot, which I never understood. It's a bit like the Larson situation where... But I could sort of understand it a bit more with Larson, because people expect him to maybe be something he's not. While O'Shea, I think he's just as solid as Brown in most games. And Brown just seems to get let off no criticism.
I think Brown's
O'Shea
quicker
does.
On the turn than O'Shea is.
Yeah, I would probably agree. And maybe if being pushed to shove, I'd probably say Brown's a better centre-half. But I think on balance, O'Shea being a...
Well, push is coming to shove, because I'm asking you what you think.
Oh, okay. Sorry. You don't normally you don't normally ask me my opinion.
No, I don't.
I would say with O'Shea being a captain, I'd keep him in with Virginie. And I don't think Quart is... It's wrong to judge him based on 45 minutes, but he really struggled against Stoke, I thought. And
yeah, Gary
I think
Bennett
he was
wasn't impressed at all with Quantes, I seem to recall.
He was always going to be the be cover, really. And he was signed near the end
of
the
window. Well, what's this we said about patience with people?
Yeah,
I know, I know.
I'm not going to write him off. I didn't think he did that badly against Stoke, but maybe
I'd
love
to see you come on one day and write somebody off. It'd be fun.
Should I just write off?
I did write off Connor Wickham.
Did you? There,
and then he
look
kept
what
us
happened
up. So, yeah, shall I write up? I'm writing off Alvarez, I'm writing off Giaccarini, I'm writing off Wickham, Fletcher and Altidore.
Well, to be fair, as you know, I said Falcao was going to be a flop for Chelsea. Diego Costa was going to be a flop for Chelsea. And then,
he might never add to those goals.
No, you never know, he might do his dodgy hamstring and never play ever again.
Yeah. Oldest looking 25-year-old in the world.
He's not the 3-30 striker that year suggested,
no,
though, is he?
I said Abel Hernandez is a 3-30 striker, and he's already got two. So I'm a bit nervous about that. Abel Hernandez, but probably to get his third against us whenever we third and fourth against us whenever we're playing them.
Have you ever thought about applying for a scouting job somewhere?
Maybe he's a little further down the leagues.
Well, you know, when Mick McCarthy got the scouting report about Andy Gray, he still signed him, and that was worse than his 3-30 striker.
I can't really be doing that much worse than our previous director of football prior to the one we currently have.
Fair enough.
Okay, right. Question of the week time.
Right, move on. What was the question again? Yeah, so you can win the book that... See, what it is, what we've been finding is that people are entering the competition and then not listening to the programme.
Shame on you.
So, I mean, that's fine if that's what you want to do.
Not,
you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen. But at the same time, if you're going to enter a competition with a question that's announced on the programme, don't bother.
Oh, did I win last week? Sorry, Gareth.
So
I only listen to the ones I'm on.
If you're listening and you get picked out to win, then you'll enjoy your prize even more, because you'll get it.
We are now taught of people who don't listen, so they won't be able to.
Yeah. So the prize wasn't claimed actually from a couple of weeks ago. It was the book up there, so we're giving that away again. And the question was based on around the flat. If you could pick two people to share a flat together, two maybe unlikely companions, who would they be and why? And I think there's another couple come through on Twitter. I'll break the rules slightly. So we've got one from Facebook. By the way, Facebook people, you need to up your game, because Twitter is beating you in the quality of answer. So you need to have a think. John Ridley, he was on Facebook. He said Lee Boy and Kieran Dyer, because he wants to see them scrap again. Sunderland fan, Peter Shilton and Tina. That would surely see the main stand seats in seats wing reform.
Sang Tina, that
yeah,
that game
yeah, that was
game
a reference. I left put that way in because it was a bit old school.
Yeah,
Graham Wright, Roy Keane, and DiCanio just to see who would crack first. Jake, O.J. Simpson, and Oscar Pistorius to see a sort of real life Hunger Games. I don't know if that's all right. Just and that's, you know,
just thrown allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Yeah,
it covers it all.
Steve said Shearer and Sorensen discuss the art of saving a penalty. Philip Ayerson said Altidore and Nosworthy both constantly confused at why they are so popular. Simon Walsh said Roy Keane, Adrian Charles' light banter. RK looks at his fists and notices there's no windows or doors, smiling wryly. Jeff Kosowski said US men's national team Jose Altidore and English Premier League Jose Altidore, they seem like opposites. Stephen Ruff said Suarez, Terry Emery and other racist footballers, with Lennox Lewis, David Hay and Mike Tyson. Tommy Boyd said Craig Garner and Tim Sherwood because the banter would be too hard to handle. And finally, topical, and my winner is Czech Tioti's two wives.
That's sticking allegedly in there too.
No, I think that's
legally sound.
That's
right,
actually happened. That's fine. That's yeah. Yeah. The allegedly comes, apparently he's got a mistress as well, allegedly.
Oh.
As well,
allegedly. But he can legally do this, isn't that right?
Are we allowed to say that?
No, it was on Twitter. So
oh,
I'm
right. Okay.
It. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was from Simon Byrne, David Coverdale. So, actually, on reflection, maybe it wasn't the best idea to mention that out loud, given it was from The Sun. But, yeah, so allegedly. But the story is that he went back. He's gone back to Africa and married another wife.
And he can legally do this.
And
is that right?
Apparently, he can legally do that. He must be, because he's done it.
Yeah.
So if he hasn't,
some people do it illegally, but they tend to go to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we have a winner? Well, anybody happy with that winner, or does somebody want?
I'm quite happy with the Czech Tioti answer.
Anyone else?
Just a nod of the head from James.
Did anybody put in Lee Cattermole and Gareth Barker?
Somebody put Alfred and Di and Gareth Barker.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't read that.
Why
one
did you read that out? It would be Luke Pauley and Lee Cattermole.
Too painful. Yeah. Too painful now. And Alf has gone.
Seb's still around for you.
We've moved on now. We've moved on from him. Yeah.
You want to tell this lad he's won then?
Yeah, so Jack Tomlin, at Tomlin97, you've won.
And you're lucky because it was a late entry.
It was a late entry.
We normally discard them,
but
the quality hasn't been great this season. We're being honest about it.
Yeah, so if you want to win.
Up your game.
Yeah, up your game. We've got, I think we've got quite a good prize coming up, actually, so prepare yourself. I'm still sorting it out with them, but I think we are getting, I'm pretty sure we're getting a copy of FIFA 15 on a next gen console. I don't know if it's PS4 or Xbox One yet, but when I find out, I'll put it on Twitter and we'll have it. We'll put that up for a prize, so keep an eye
look
for
your
that
game, because it was great last season.
Yeah, and that's a good prize, so we're going to be, you know, that's a really good prize.
Maybe you should dumb the questions down,
so we're going to be expecting high quality answers.
Right, I'd like to thank my guests for coming on this week. James Hunter from The Chronicle, Luke Bowley from Rogue Report. I'd like to thank Sun FM for providing us with the audio. Gareth and myself will be around to do the End of the Light show for Sun FM on Thursday, so make sure you listen to that. We'll be back here next week discussing a win. I'm absolutely sure of it. Sorry if there's been any tech issues tonight. We've had a few problems with the microphones, but thanks for listening. Over and out.